This is Carlos Chavez, and you're listening to Chicanismo on KBOO 90.7 FM.
Been on both sides of the fence, chasing possible means. My family crossed the border in search of the dream. No long before my eyes opened and saw the reality. 12 hours in the maquila and barely surviving. Went from an artist with potential to someone who claims working and working and working, cracking her spleen. Politicians said, compared to your country, this is peaches and cream. Don't sugarcoat the situation. The dream is a scheme. Come on, come on. Some of us recognize the work that's been done in opposition to the system and examples that won from young God to CIW to the South Central Farm to autonomous education that becomes a threat to this nation. What? Anger burns slow when I heard the sleeping giant awoke. 500 years of struggle will let you know that it's wrong. So be ignoring what your people's been thinking and doing. We ain't been sleeping, no. What we've been doing is working. A consistency of resistance is like a consistency in flooding, not in mix, but of corruption is scheming through the tactic of fearing. Got us running, they say, but look who's winning now. We tear it down. Sending us back and saying, no selfie, we'll end up in prison.
This morning I want to start off by playing some poetry by an extremely talented young poet named Mark Gonzalez. An Alaskan-born Chicano who now resides in Los Angeles, Mark Gonzalez is a playwright, performance lecturer, and HBO deaf poet and student at the University of California, Los Angeles. Using street ciphers as public education, Mark has held class in cities such as Seattle, New York, Los Angeles, Havana, Cuba, Amman, Jordan, and Jerusalem. This piece was inspired by his visit in 2004 along the West Bank and Gaza Strip that I felt would be relevant not only to the situation in Gaza, but also to the many families who lay victim to the constant realities of war in the entire Middle Eastern region of the world. This one is titled Gaza with Caprice and...
Slingshot. David's become Goliath using tanks instead of rocks. He must be rumbled to be humbled if this occupation's gonna stop. The Star of David is locked up behind two cell bars, blue like Palestinian children under curfew, which turns homes into prisons. Home demolition, so they fly kites out their window with Palestinian colors. City of God, City of Allah. Welcome. Daughters get modded, cause their fathers got slaughtered. The world's a stage, so Israel writes the drama. Should he play his ways?
Blow up like the world's
last days to declare love. The caged bird sings, so do Palestinian doves. We fly with clipped wings to the tune of Adonis. I am a John Lennon dreamer, and Palestine is a woman named Rima. R to the I, to the M, to the A. AK, she knew what's in her alphabet book until Zionist crooks took her homeland in 1917 years old. Home bulldozed, no one to hold since father got shot by soldiers who load verses and rifles, ballistics and Bibles. Rivals turn biblical, David become Goliath, slave turn master. Peace gets slower, bullets get faster, a natural disaster. Palestinians massacred from Al-Aqsa Mosque to Iraq. This is a true hip stop. Breathe. Again. 88 resolutions from the UN Israel violates, yet we wait like they wait at checkpoints while Rima's raped at gunpoint in her face in Israeli prison. Child are born livid instead of living, dodging bullets and strollers, Israeli bulldozers, government bowlers, bowling for Columbine, bowling for Palestine. She was a friend of mine who died with no headlines, no stories. Rima, the original Rachel Corey.
Stuff in the position, Palestinians first. Imagine your family laying in front of you dead, reminiscing what your mother said. You live the life of a soldier, son. Never give up, cause one day Palestine will see the sun. Now you see my fist is up, the throw is up, scream. scream as loud as you can. The victory's coming, the victory's coming. I'm the Palestinian who just witnessed the blast. 10 civilians on the ground and one rock in the flag. A woman giving birth on the curb blocked by the tanks. We're being hospitalized, true design is clear. The sunset on the Gaza Strip, a face in the sky. Screaming praise in the form of a poem. I'm living life with infinite mental images of modern slavery. Painful pictures like the bullets thrown at Ryan Avery. I'm the civilian trapped in your television screen. When you turn away, reality is pathetic, you see. A revolution we can see, but never be born. Stuck in a cell called the world, living life in a storm. All I'm seeing is live satellite footage of Palestinians captured. 75 bullets, innocent lives lost, homes demolished, brought down, another child dead. Will anybody talk now? Gaza, it's the city where I see drama. No, we fighting the beast, trauma. To the point of being deceased, the child continues to fight, and we'll never give up. Cause one day Palestine, the sun, now you see my fist is up. Throw yours up and scream as loud as you can. The victory's coming, the victory's coming. The victory's coming, the victory's coming.
Was poet, playwright, and performance artist Mark Gonzalez with some help from Erica Badu and Nelly Furtado. Now we move into another human rights issue here in the United States regarding immigration. Though immigration discussions have died down recently, I thought it would be important to focus on some immigration topics that are often overlooked. Along the U.S.-Mexican border, National Guard now assists with the Border Patrol's efforts, and new Border Patrol agents train to fill positions that our elected officials feel aren't secure. New and improved fences are erected and holding facilities expanded, contracts are awarded, and basic facts are once again overlooked. One important fact is that the growing border buildup is no answer to the flow of immigrants across the southern U.S. border, and in fact, adds to the increase of deaths for those who choose the difficult trek into the U.S. for work. Studies done by the Center for Immigration Research at the University of Houston, Texas, found that immigration continues to climb regardless of the amount of border buildup. Though the U.S. annual budget had already tripled between 1980 and 2001, migration continued to climb as well as the number of deaths due to the more difficult terrain in which migration has now been rerouted. Another fact is that while detention facilities open their doors to more beds and revenue from Homeland Security to house immigrants, they continue to commit violations of human rights across the country. I spoke to Allison Parker, the acting director of the U.S. Program of Human Rights Watch. She explains her knowledge on the subject and HRW's position on immigration detention centers in the United States.
Human Rights Watch has been investigating and staying on top of conditions issues in immigration detention centers in the United States since about the mid-1990s. As you may know, the immigration laws became much stronger and stricter in the United States in 1996. And partly after those laws were passed, we decided to engage in an investigation of the treatment of immigrants throughout the country in immigration detention facilities, specifically looking at one category of facilities which we felt raised a whole series of human rights concerns. And those were the facilities where the federal government has contracted with county jails and prisons to hold non-citizens in essentially facilities that were intended for criminals. And as many of your listeners may know, the 96 laws essentially criminalized or caused non-citizens to have to be detained who may have committed a criminal act in the past, but they'd already served their sentence, and now they were being subject to mandatory detention and often deportation, and they were being held in facilities where they were intermixed with criminals and were subject to conditions that were inappropriate because they weren't criminals. They were simply non-citizens. And so we engaged in a systematic investigation of these facilities throughout the country. So that was really Human Rights Watch's first look at this issue. We also looked at how unaccompanied minors, juveniles who came to this country who are non-citizens without their parents, were being detained, specifically in the southwest of the country, and raised several concerns about the treatment and conditions that the juveniles were being held in. So those are two of the major issues that Human Rights Watch has been engaged in for many years. But we continue to look at the detention of non-citizens and, for example, most recently did an investigation after September 11th in which hundreds of non-citizens, particularly those from the Middle East, South Asia, and North Africa, were put into detention and held in conditions that were both very problematic because they were subjected to beatings and to other kinds of inappropriate uses of force, but also because they didn't have access to judicial review and they were held secretly, meaning that their families and even attorneys couldn't figure out where their clients were being held.
And do you think that the 9/11 incident is what is the major push for a lot of the influx in the amount of people that are being detained nowadays?
Well, certainly the federal government and immigration authorities claim that the need for increased detention facilities is because of a stronger immigration enforcement presence at borders and ports of entry or at airports. And we have seen since 9/11 an increase in those enforcement activities. The truth is, and this may be surprising to people, the laws that are used to detain non-citizens in many cases have been in place since those 1996 laws were adopted. But what the U.S. government has done is it's used them much more rigorously, and in fact, in situations where we have serious concerns about the legitimacy of the use of those laws, and has increasingly put people into detention facilities, requiring from the perspective of the federal government, the building of new facilities and more arrangements in which the federal government subcontracts with local prisons and jails to house non-citizen immigrant populations.
Can you give some examples of some of the conditions that people, including the youth that are being detained, are facing when they are detained?
Certainly. Let's start with our investigation of some 700 individuals who were put into immigration detention after September 11th. In these cases, as I mentioned, the individuals, the very fact that they were being detained was not disclosed to the public. So the first problem is communication with the outside world and ensuring that these people have access to counsel, which they very much need when their rights are their right to liberty in the first place, but also their interest in remaining in the country are being tested in courts. And so one of the major questions is, when people are put into detention, how can they stay in touch with family? How can they prepare a good case, which they have every right to do within our immigration system? And how can they find an attorney, because they have no right to counsel under the Constitution? They're not considered criminal detainees, and so they have to pay for attorneys themselves or find a pro bono counsel. And how can they do that when they're being held in secret in detention? The other set of very serious rights violations that we focused on, and this happened in for a subcategory of the September 11th detainees, were beatings and use of dogs and the tripping of these non-citizens, you know, stepping on their shackles as they were being transported through the hallways so that they would trip and fall onto the cement floor, throwing the detainees into cement walls so that they would get bruises or other cuts on their heads and other parts of their bodies. Very serious abuses of just the personal right to, you know, to personal integrity and to be free from that kind of excessive use of force.
Do you see these examples increasing, or have you seen steps to change any of this?
Well, that was a very specific time, of course. It was immediately after September 11th, and so there certainly have been steps to... None of what I've just described is acceptable, even within the federal government's own standards. And the Office of the Inspector General of the Department of Justice did an investigation of one of the facilities where these allegations of abuse were widespread, and that was a facility in Brooklyn. You know, when an investigation like that happens and the abuses that we had originally documented are then re-documented by the federal government, there are measures put in place to reduce those kinds of abuses. So, so that was a very systematic set of abuses that we were encouraged to see the federal government investigate themselves and bring some measures into place so that people don't get beaten in the way that those non-citizens were beaten. However, we still hear of isolated incidents in facilities throughout the country where these kinds of things occur. Most recently, there have been allegations coming out of the Passaic County Jail in New Jersey in which immigrants who are detained there have alleged that they have been beaten and also that they have been subjected to, they've been brought out of their cells or intimidated through the use of dogs. Again, inappropriate treatment for anybody. And in the case of non-citizens, the other factor to remember is what I raised at the beginning of our conversation, that these people are not criminals. They have served their criminal sentence. They may have immigration problems, but those are administrative issues, and they aren't the kinds of issues that would bring about the need for high security treatment of this type of non-citizen. And also, in other cases, the people who are in detention are actually asylum seekers. They're people fleeing persecution, people who come with a whole range of fears and past experiences that are quite traumatic. And to see people in those circumstances being held in these kinds of conditions raises very serious concerns from a rights perspective.
Some of these examples that you're giving, do these pertain to children as well?
Yes. Human Rights Watch, as I mentioned, did an investigation of the treatment of unaccompanied minors in immigration detention facilities. And coming out of our report in the early 90s, we actually did see improvements in the federal government's treatment of unaccompanied minors. Their custody was transferred to the Office of Refugee Resettlement, which is an office that is much more concerned with some of the pressing needs that, of course, young people have, their particular needs for education and for other kinds of appropriate treatment. So that was a very encouraging sign. At the same time, you know, we have concerns just about the sheer numbers of children who are in immigration detention. It's projected that in 2006, 7,000 children will be detained by this office, the Office of Refugee Resettlement. And so that's a very large number of juvenile non-citizens who are being subjected to immigration detention. Juveniles have particular needs. They shouldn't be housed with adults. They should have access to appropriate education. They should have access to exercise. they shouldn't be subjected to the use of shackles and restraints unless there is some kind of emergency or security concern that requires that type of treatment. And unfortunately, one of our colleague organizations, Amnesty International, in 2003, did find problems in all of the categories that I've just named. Children, immigrant children being housed with adults, immigrant children being denied access to education and exercise. And, of course, as you can imagine, immigrant children having a very difficult time defending their immigration cases in immigration court because they're having to do it from prison. And as one might imagine, it's very difficult to fight an immigration case when you're a child, but even more difficult when your liberty is constrained and your access to family, to paperwork you might need, and, of course, to counsel is just that much more difficult.
Now, one thing that I'm very interested in the overall detention and the border buildup that's going on, are some of the contracts being awarded to groups such as Halliburton, a group that was awarded $385 million by Homeland Security to build detention centers in the U.S. I don't know whether they've built anything yet, but that concerns me, especially since Dick Cheney had an interest with Halliburton, still does. And there are just several different types of contradictions in that situation, and also with companies such as the Corrections Corporation of America and a GEO group, formerly Wackenhut. What are your thoughts on that?
One of our concerns as we started to look at private facilities that are owned by some of the contractors that you've just named, as well as just county prisons and jails, is that these facilities don't necessarily have an interest in treating immigrants as they should be treated, in treating them as individuals, in some cases with special needs, if they're juveniles, if they're non-English speaking, if they're fleeing persecution and have mental health or other kinds of trauma-related problems. And most fundamentally, the different types of both private contractors you've described and then, of course, the regular state and county jail and prison systems, those facilities are used to housing criminals. These non-citizens are not criminals. They have, in some cases, committed crimes in the past, but they have already served their sentences in state penitentiary systems or in private run state penitentiary systems. They're now in immigration detention, and immigration detention should not be punitive. It should not involve the kinds of punitive treatment that does occur in some of those other kinds of facilities. The other thing that, of course, we're very concerned about is that there are some good standards out there. There are national detention standards that have been put in place, partly because of work that Human Rights Watch has done, because of work that other rights groups have done, trying to document the kinds of problems that exist in detention facilities. But those are federal standards, and any time you take one step away from the federal government's control of these facilities, so for example, when there's a contract with a private company that essentially is a money-making enterprise, what interest do they have in making sure that those detention standards are implemented in the centers that they're running? It's not the same. It's not the same as if the federal government, state officials who can be held accountable because they're acting as state officials, it's not the same standard of care. And so we have very serious concerns about the privatization of this issue because we have seen larger problems with rights violations when private contractors get involved.
Rights Watch's approach towards these violations is to document the abuses nationwide, entering the facilities for independent investigations into the conditions and treatment that detainees face. Interviews with the undocumented detainees and their attorneys supplement much of the documentation that is gathered, which is then published and used to draw attention to the ill treatment being encountered in these facilities. For more information on today's topics, log on to www.humanrightswatch.org and www.uh.edu/cir/index.htm. Thanks for listening to Chicanismo. I'm your host, Carlos Chavez.
Good morning. You're listening to KBOO Community Radio 90.7 on your FM dial in Portland, Oregon. The time is now 10:28 in the morning. Coming up at 10:30 on Art Focus, host Julie Bernard speaks with artist Zachary Kircher, whose work is included in the Oregon Biennial, now at the Portland Art Museum. And at 11, it's Democracy Now! The Justice Department has ruled FBI agents were justified in the fatal shooting of Puerto Rican independence leader killed during a raid on his home. Oil industry watchdog Chuck Hamill asked questions about whether BP purposely allowed its Alaska pipeline to become corroded. Also, scientists are trying to control one of the worst environmental disasters ever to hit Lebanon. And a progressive activist grills Israel's ambassador to the United States on Israel's targeting of civilians and use of cluster bombs in Lebanon, Israel's nuclear arsenal, and its lack of adherence to United Nations Security Council resolutions. And now for Julie Bernard and Art Focus.